This week on RSBNB Update, Wilderness Flash Events tempt Skillage to the Wilderness with new rewards and two mini-quests that point the direction of RuneScape's future story. The Jagex launcher now supports multiple accounts, and Mod Jack details the rebalancing of drop tables. This is RSBNB Update, episode 905, recorded Thursday, October 20th, 2022. Getting Flashed. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. Tanis is here with me, as he is mostly each and every week. Welcome.
Thank you, Shane.
Also joining us this week to talk about the Wilderness Flash events and two mini-quests, and I underscore the word mini in those, is Zerdones, member of Clan Quest, Master Quest Cape owner. Welcome.
Hi there. Glad to be back.
We just heard from you not too long ago, so good to have you back, and I figured I'd ask you since it was mini-quest week. I didn't know going in how mini they were going to be, but I was soon shown that these do fit the definition of true mini-quests.
They're pretty many.
We'll get to the definition of what happens in Civil War 1 and 2 in just a wee bit, but this week our primary objective is going to be to have a look at the Wilderness Flash events, talk through some of the live streams that were aired this week, particularly the Let's Play and Mod Jack's episode this week, and some big news that hasn't been talked about on the RuneScape front page. The Jagex launcher now supports multiple accounts, which is obviously big news for anybody who has multiple accounts, and this is what they were working towards all year on this, and we haven't heard that this is out in an official news post, aside from release notes and what's on the launcher page. But that's something that we're going to have to take a look at, because that is a big step forward for all things RuneScape. But as I mentioned, we're going to start with the Wilderness Flash events. You can find our full show notes at update.show, where you can follow along in there. You can find me in-game at Shane12088 or Shane with three E's on Fresh Start. Tanis can be found at FSWTanis79, and Zerdones can be found at Zerd4s. Interestingly enough, I bet there's a story behind that that we'll hear at some point about your naming convention on that. So, Wilderness Flash events. These events fire off at the top of every hour. There's a collection of 13 of them, a dozen plus one, that take place at different spots throughout the entire wilderness. And there's a few that are appetizing to me. Do you guys have any favorites coming into this, Tanis or Zerdones?
No favorites.
I'm rather partial to the evil bloodwood tree.
Okay.
Largely because it counts for three for the trim comp requirement. That's a big one.
Oh.
Assuming you win all three, but...
Okay. I didn't know that. Does it also count for three for the achievement needed for Civil War II?
I think so. I'm not 100% sure, but I expect it would, because those achievements are all tracking individual completion.
Individual completions, yeah.
And I think each phase of a multi-phase counts as a single one for completion purposes.
Okay. Okay, that would make sense how they wired that up. Interesting. I didn't know that. Good to know. I appreciate that. And, you know, as for me, as somebody who is currently occupying around the 21st slot on the Fresh Start Worlds farming high scores, I can't say no to the surprise seedlings twice a day if it matches up with my schedule, since that one gives farming XP. So that's the one I've been focused on, trying to log in for whenever it arrives. So, and with that, I think we need to talk, Tanis, about why you feel the way that you do. And obviously, we're going to jump around a bit in the notes here, but let's nail out the accessibility side right now. Is it an accessibility issue? Is it a timing issue? Is it a gameplay issue? What's going on?
Well. It's a little bit of everything. probably first and foremost, it is a challenge with accessibility, mainly because, well, look, the color coordinated stuff is always challenging. But even more challenging than that is something that I kind of call visual clutter. With that many people and that much just busyness going on, it's really hard for me to find what I'm looking for. So, you know, there are probably strategies and ways that I could get around some of these issues if I really wanted to. But then the other problem that starts to kick in is I've really come to like just learn that I'm not a timed event kind of person. I get doing what I want to be doing, and I don't like leaving and going and doing something else. And it's just, you know, like I said, I might be able to get around some of the other stuff, but I just don't like to be on that kind of a schedule like that. And then it's the finding the stuff. I'm so slow. The threat level rises, but I've died more than once.
When you say finding the stuff, is it finding the event or finding the stuff at the event?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah.
When it comes to finding the actual events, after you complete all of the events, you do unlock a teleport from the Impenetrable Realm who will teleport you directly to the event after you've completed them all once.
That doesn't seem to be completely working, though.
Oh, really?
Because I have that unlock, and I have never managed to persuade that bloody imp to teleport me anywhere.
Huh,
my understanding, I didn't watch the Let's Play live stream this week, but my understanding is that they said on that live stream that there is a bug there they're going to be fixing on Monday.
Oh, right, that's right. That was the case. Now that you mentioned that, I do remember that. That will be fixed on Monday. Okay, so let's just put a note for anybody listening to this over the weekend then. And when it comes to timed events, going into this update, I was actually in complete agreement with you, Tanis, that I didn't like the fact that I was being forced to change my login habits for these events, and that, you know, hey, maybe this might be at 4 p.m., so I'm going to have to find a way to remember that this is happening at that time and log in with mobile and have the character ready to go and such with that. So that is something that did come up for my mind. But what I instead started seeing these as, and maybe this is a reframe in my mind, what I started seeing these as was just something a little bit extra to go and do if you are logged in. And you're only going to make that extra effort to go and do one of these if you're hunting the XP in that skill, like I'm hunting the XP in farming. That's the way I started seeing it.
That makes sense. And if I was on the main game right now, maybe, you know, I would still have all the accessibility issues, but I probably wouldn't have the same kind of being drawn away kind of stuff. And don't get me wrong, this isn't a criticism on the content or anything like that.
No, it's a very solid piece of content design-wise.
It is. And it's just, it doesn't fit my game style, but that's not a reflection of, you know, of the content itself.
Like,
content,
I mean, and this is pulling from the live stream, and this is why I said we're going to be jumping around a lot. They literally wrote a system with this update so that you could have any of these events in the future at anywhere in the world. So if they, for some reason, wanted to do a Christmas event that had random things every hour, every quarter hour, they could, using this technology. And you know what the interesting part about this that actually came to mind for me with this, and this kind of goes on with some people have been saying about a potential astronomy skill. You have to do things at certain times if you want to look up into the sky to observe things. What if this is the underpinnings of the astronomy skill?
Well, I mean, I guess having a whole skill time based like the iPad. Hey, I'm I'm reserving
right,
judgment.
Right, because I mean,
I might get some pushback on that, just maybe.
And
that's one thing that has just been kind of floated is that it might be astronomy and whatnot. But I'm just saying, if it were astronomy, you could use a system like this as part of that skill.
Well, that's the scary part. Let me shine a light on and make this a little brighter. The way that I see that is if there was an event like this, but say it was in the world at large, a map that I'm familiar with, a place where I know how to get around, I know where things are, that would have been more accessible for me.
Okay.
I would still have the clutter, but at least I would be able to find my way. Because even when you don't have, even when I'm out there, like it's, for me, and maybe it's just me, but I get lost in the wildy so easy.
It's very uniform in color and whatnot, right?
Yeah, there's not a lot of landmarks. That's the main problem for me, yeah. That contrast, right?
Yeah.
There is none.
Well, not to like try and minimize your problems, but the RS Wiki since Monday has a wonderful page for Wilderness Flash events that shows you what event is going to be up next, where all the events spawn on a centralized map, and if you're looking for a certain event, it shows a map cutout of where that's going to be, along with the upcoming times for that event.
Well, that's a good, I mean... That's
right, and this is on the tool. RS Wiki page for this, and you know, it just makes accessing them so much easier. In that, like for example, the Forgotten Soldiers event, it says Daemonheim forces are preparing to deploy a raiding party of Forgotten Soldiers on the plain near the Daemonheim Peninsula. When I first went to that event, I thought it was immediately outside of the exit to Daemonheim, but it's actually just a little bit up north of that. In the main wilderness area. So it's not right outside the Daemonheim entrance. You got to kind of go around the water and up north, northeast a bit from there. So,
yeah.
And the RS Wiki helps you out with those kind of things. So there is a solution to that, but granted, for somebody who doesn't want to rely on the wiki, that is a valid point.
Well, it's still, even looking at a map and then getting there.
From the accessibility
I mean, you're looking at,
Well,
because think about like my field of vision with what I can click on, it just takes me longer.
Yeah.
And that threat level rises, things don't work out well for me.
True.
I will say that in regards to getting around, there's off top of my head, I think three of the events that are within about 10 squares of the Wilderness Lodestone.
Yeah.
So that's at least a couple.
Really?
Shouldn't be too hard to get to.
The Bloodwood Tree.
One, yeah, the Bloodwood Tree is a little bit to the southwest.
The Hunter one and the Farming one.
Yep. Those are the other
Okay.
two.
Well, that's...
And then there's another couple that are just directly north of Varrock. There's one that's directly north of the Grand Exchange. There's one that's right at the Zamorak Wizard where you do your rune crafting.
There's a couple that are very near the wilderness entrance to Daemonheim. Those are a little bit farther out, but
yeah. So they're kind of around those areas, but still, there's no like wayfinding marker once you're in the wild to get there. It's not gonna, you know, like throw up a marker on your map as you would expect it to do. And I remember back in the day when we were watching live streams preparing for the mobile launch. I know that's something that they said they wanted to do from their core experience team of the day was work on getting those wayfinding markers and whatnot in the game for more things. And I think that's kind of one thing that has fallen by the wayside that was initially planned to do for mobile, but I guess it was just something that was never iterated on. So I can see how that something like that could be helpful there for that. So.
Definitely. I mean, I can remember both the player own farm tutorial and archaeology. You know, that had the trails and the markers, and It was so nice. I went on and on about right. how
like nice an, like in an ideal world, you would say go to the imp in Edgeril, and he would tell you that the event is starting, and you'd cross the wilderness wall, and it would put a marker on the map and guide you that way, because this is an event that's designed, with the exception of the heavy combat ones, to be for all skill levels, because that XP lamp you get the XP drop you get is equivalent of a large lamp, so that's going to scale from level 1 to 120 in all the skills. So with that being said, you can kind of make the case as to if we're looking at things that could be potentially added for quality of life on this, add some kind of marker for people who enter one of these events by finding the map. So I think that would be a fair compromise on everything that we've been talking about accessibility-wise here for the last number of minutes.
Yeah, that would definitely help me out.
Yeah, and, you know, to be fair, though, you look at the combat events in particular, and even some of the skilling ones on the first few days, it was absolute chaos there.
Oh, it still is, too. It's so many people, the combat ones especially. Like I mentioned this in pre-show, but if you're epileptic, my heart goes out to you for all the people firing off Magma Tempest at these effects.
Yeah, 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 exactly. And familiars and whatnot, too, right? So, just imagine all that going on. And speaking of chaos at these events, when they were doing the Let's Play live stream, they actually went to one of the events near the end of the stream and wound up, one of the people who went there wound up having a hardcore Iron Man die at the event.
Whoops.
Oops. This is not a safe event.
No, absolutely not. It's fully dangerous with everything that you expect in the modern wilderness. So,
what a way to go.
But I think that covers the events that are out there. I'll just give a quick mention to the actual skills that are covered with this. You have divination, farming, fire making, hunter, mining, prayer, woodcutting, and combat. I think that's a good choice. Main reason, of course, for me, obviously the farming, but also I think woodcutting is in need of something like this. Hunter is definitely need for something like this, as just kind of adding a little bit of spice to the skill of the low to mid ranges. And divination, let's face it, it's either divination at a wisp colony or cache. So if you can get an extra divination large lamp or two worth of XP in a day, that's worth it.
Yeah.
I think prayer, too. Anything to make prayer a little bit less monster.
I should actually start doing the prayer one on my fresh start now that you mentioned that.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty good. I mean, like you say, it's a large lamp once or twice a day.
For free.
It's so, not nothing.
Yeah. There's also the reward selection that you get from this, in particular the Sack of Wild Rewards. And if you do a special event, you get extra rewards from this. And, oh boy, this was actually a really nice thing to see, because these reward bags, sacks, are dropping Necronium Salvage as one of their common drops.
So much Necronium Salvage.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I mean, if you have 55 magic on fresh start, this is a wonderful money making method, because we've been looking for an easy way of getting salvage on fresh start, and lo and behold, here it is. Just do the special events.
Yeah, I've been averaging about a mil worth of alkables per run. It's a lot.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of them even just gave me a 500k drop worth of coins for one of the special events that I did.
Nice.
The special events can also give you a chance of getting a Draconic Visage, Dragon Rider boots, and Dragon Rider gloves, amongst other things, if you do the KBD one. So,
for you Master Questers out there, apparently it also gives greatly increased chance at the Last Riders drop, the super ultra mega crazy rare lore book that is like a 1 in 5K, I think. From KBD?
Yeah, you know, I should probably get on that if I ever want to do Master Quest, right?
It's a good one. I mean, the good thing about it is it does have bad luck mitigation. Like, I think it's guaranteed at like 2,000, 5,000 kills, whatever it is. That's still a lot of kills.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's KBD isn't what he used to be. No. But still.
No, it's definitely an AFK-able boss if you know what you're doing combat-wise and you have high stats. So, yeah. But just as an extra chance of being able to get this, that's good. Another reason that you might be interested in doing this, and this is actually goes to you, Tana, something called the Obsidian Palmstones you can get from these. They're tradable on the GE. These prevent your threat level from going up, and every time the threat level would go up, a Palmstone is consumed.
Oh, well, that's actually, I wonder how expensive they are.
I don't know. That could be helpful. I don't know. There's also Volcanic Protections. When you carry these, it reduces damage from one attack from the volcano. So there's a way of mitigating that as well. There's also an item that you can click once. It's a one-time use, and it'll just take one off your threat level. That's the Trail Be Gone. Other interesting drops from this include Black Salamanders, Red Chinchampas, Bloodwood Seeds that are normally 50k a pop, so that's a nice extra source for those. Infernal Ashes, Wyvern Bones, Muddy Keys, Brilliant and Radiant Energy. We'll get into more of what the Muddy Keys are used for after. And actually, I think we can actually do that right now based on the Obsidian items. Is there anything else on the standard drop table that you guys want to talk about?
The Obelisk Shard and the Portable Obelisk, are worth bringing up.
Right.
So the Obelisk Shard is a consumable teleport to Wilderness Obelisk. It's the same mechanics as the Obelisk, so it'll teleport you to a random one, unless you, I think it's the hard Wilderness tasks that lets you choose which one you go to.
Yeah.
And then the Portable Obelisk is just an infinite one of those.
That's interesting. That's actually really interesting, the Portable Obelisk. And it's not tradable.
Yeah, it seems really cool. No, it's not tradable, which personally I really like.
Yeah. Huh. I can think of definitely some use cases for that in terms of wilderness skilling, wilderness resource gathering, herb farming, etc. and whatnot. So that's pretty
herb farming, bloodwood runs, access to these events.
Now the question that comes up in terms of these rewards, are these more useful than the Dark Onyx core items, which I think we should move to now? Because we've just really underscored here that portable obelisks and threat mitigation methods are something that people are interested in, and Tanis would probably use. But is that more interesting combined with the Neutronium Salvage? Is that more interesting than the Dark Onyx course for enhancing our alchemical onyx jewelry?
I think the Dark Grace of the Elves is a really good one. The other two, I think, are a little bit more marginal.
Yeah. And I'm just going to start with the Dark Facet of Luck, which is the enhancement to the Luck of the Dwarves or Hazelmere's Ring, because that one has drawn some criticism in the Clue community, and it's kind of like a meh, whatever kind of update to that ring. And to make this, you need the Dark Onyx core from the event, 7 corporeal components, 10 onyx, and 10 muddy keys. Now, what this does to your Luck of the Dwarves is it enhances the Luck of the Dwarves to have a teleport to the Barbarian camp, I believe it is. That's where it goes. The Dwarven Outpost.
Yeah, the Dwarven Outpost. So it's east of the, or west of the coal mine.
Yeah, west of the coal trucks. It also gives you a 1% chance to skip a step on the completion of a clue step, and a 0.1% chance to gain 2 caskets from the completion of a clue scroll. And in general, in terms of the amount of clues completed and the amount of steps that are done by cluers, they feel that, okay, this is kind of a nice thing to have, but it's not something I'm gonna jump up and down about. just because of the how infrequently this stuff is going to happen. But I guess if you're doing lots of clues, that extra two caskets could be nice. The teleport, I guess, is okay, because I don't know that there's anything that teleports near there. I think your closest thing is, what, the Sears Lodestone? But even then, that's a bit of a run.
Sears Lodestone or Game's Necklace to Barbarian Outpost.
Yeah.
That would be the next closest, I think.
And hence why the reaction to this one was kind of flat. So I think if you're an avid cluer and you're going to be doing thousands of clues and thousands of clue steps, this is one that you're going to look at. So I think, if anything, this one's probably the flattest of the bunch. So,
yeah, it's definitely for the top-end clue people.
Yeah.
It's a marginal improvement.
Yeah. Next, I want to go to the Dark Facet of Passage, which is, and by its name, as you might guess, an enchantment for the Passage of the Abyss. Once again, Dark Onyx Core, Ascended Components, 10 Onyx, an Abyssal Wand, and an Abyssal Orb. And what this does is it grants your Passage of the Abyss infinite teleport charges. So you don't need to recharge the Passage of the Abyss.
This is another one I think is actually pretty... Like, this sounds really good, but I think it's actually fairly marginal because... In my experience, the Passage of the Abyss already functionally has infinite charges.
Yeah, because you put so many into it.
Right. Well, the charge mechanics right now are you spend one fortunate component, and that gives you, I think it's 500 teleport charges.
Right.
You will never use 500. If you use 500 teleports to get a single fortunate component from clues,
there's a problem.
Do not buy a lottery ticket. You are the antithesis of luck.
that's true. That is a good point.
And at the same time, I mean, fortunate components are what, 1.4 mil ish. I mean, it's not like it's a huge cost to recharge. So
I feel like the main benefit to this is you don't have to wait. You don't have to quote unquote waste a fortunate component,
right,
that could have gone to make an alchemical onyx or an alchemical hydrix to sell. And that's okay. Sure. Fine.
And, you know, I'm the only people that I know that use the Passage of the Abyss or cluers, so.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yep.
So, both of these are aimed at them, and they're just kind of, okay, whatever, nice to have. But then we go to the dark Facet of Grace, which is for the Grace of the Elves, 7 Saren components, 10 Onyx, and 5 Crystal Tool Seeds. And what this does for you... Tanis, you're going to want one of these. It increases your maximum porter charges from 500 to 2,000.
Oh, snap! Oh, I want it. I want it now. Oh.
Shut up and take my money.
Yeah, I need that.
Well, I'll get doing flash events, bud. Or just buy the enchantment off of the exchange, but I heard on launch day one of these sold for max cash.
Yeah,
They'll come down.
Yeah, they'll come down eventually.
But that's not all it does. It improves the skill prayer drain reduction rate from 50 to 100%. So you won't drain your prayer points when using those prayers with Grace of the Elves.
Oh, I need this. How can this one be so good and the other one so meh? Like this?
Just think of all the time you spent at the smithery sucking those potions down.
Well,
or did you use prayer renewal, or did you use the Elven Ritual Shard?
Once I figured out I should be using the Elven Ritual Shard, that's what I did.
Okay.
But then once I got the offhand, I didn't have to worry about it at all.
Yeah, I was going to say, the offhand already does this for smithing at least, but I guess for some of the other skills, it would be nice, like light form and that,
mm-hmm.
for your pickpocketing. Yep.
Exactly.
And once again, it's a question just like the other two. Do you need this, or is it just going to be a quality of life and enhancement for your skill?
Well, right? I'm going to need this for 120 y'all. I'm wondering too if this would probably affect crystallize.
Mm-hmm.
So
light form.
Yeah, no, I would need this. I need it. I want it.
And this brings it to the question of the reward space and why they chose this reward space, and this was touched on in the live stream. And the idea behind it is that they chose this one because they feel that the alchemical onyx items are just something that so many people interact with that it made sense to do it for this.
Yeah, these are like good rewards. I'm surprised a little bit at just how good they are being in a timed event. Because do we know, like, this, if is this, I mean, it's going to go away, right? Like,
No. This isn't not going away. This is in game forever.
Oh, it's permanent?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Well, that helps. I was afraid that it was like a temporary
flash event, as in here and gone, mm-hmm. right? Okay. Yeah, but this is a permanent piece of content.
Okay. That's... Oh, this is what they were talking about. Oh, got you. Yeah. This was the other part of the Wildy.
Exactly. That was what they piggybacked on in the live stream, that this was actually built concurrently with the Wilderness rework that we got in August, but because of those delays thing mentioned, it was supposed to ship in September.
Okay.
Back to back. Just to kind of add in that, you know, the Wilderness isn't all slayer and killing. There's these kinds of things here too.
Yeah. There's also dying, you know?
Yeah.
But at least this time it won't be other players that kill you.
There you go. And apparently the Dark Onyx Core is a rare reward from the sack of Very Wild Rewards. So it's not stupid rare, but it's rare.
Mm-hmm.
It's fairly rare, especially since it's only from the special events.
Yeah. Okay, so the last thing to talk about before we move on to the Civil War mini quests, the schedule rotates by having an odd number of events, 13 rather than 12. And I already mentioned the system that was built, and effectively the contribution, your personal contribution is there to just make sure that everybody does what's needed for the group. It doesn't actually affect your reward. So just as long as you hit that personal contribution marker, you're going to get the rewards that you were supposed to get. And I think the last thing I want to say, and I already touched on this before, is that the RS Wiki has a wonderful schedule for this. If you're wondering when any of the next ones are going to turn up, for example, the next Bloodwood Tree is going to turn up at 500 game time on Friday morning. And if you wanted to know when the next, let's just say that next Lost Souls event is going to happen, that's going to happen on Friday, October 21st at 1500 game time. And so long from now, because that's actually the one that just happened not too long ago as a recording here. So the RS Wiki page for the Wilderness Flash events is going to be your best way to figure out when it's going to be, since in-game it doesn't say what the actual schedule is. It just lets you know 5 minutes before. So if you want to plan out which one you're going to be at, this RS Wiki page is the page for you to be on. And that's linked in the full show notes at update.show. So before we move on and start talking about Civil War Part 1 and Part 2, the two mini-quests, emphasis on mini there, I want to give a shout-out this week to our Patreon supporters who make everything we do here at RSBNB possible. In particular, I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvids L., Bear Down, Beekeeper Steve, Big Huge Rat, Bryflex, Chunk the Monk, Corey D., Cycall RS, Diana, Drama Free, Plaza Man, Free Milk, Jacob G., Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Ling01, Mohan V., Nate the Great, Nick G., OTR Gamer, Pernasius, Ricky A., Samuel FL, Skiotan, Scott DS, Shirtpants, Stub Eve, The Naked Captain, Tom V., and Zant. Thank you, everybody, for your support. It truly means the world to us. And if you're wondering what we're talking about our Patreon offerings, which you can find at patreon.com/RSBNB. Starting for as little as a dollar a month, you'll gain access to our entire back catalog of monthly bits. That's our special monthly bonus shows that we do. Voting is currently underway for the next one, and it'll be wrapping up shortly, but the choices that were put on offer this month include Dailyscape Part 3, The Evolution of Mobility, which is about getting around the world, and a look at holiday events in RuneScape since we're heading up to Halloween and Christmas, and we'll be looking at what the modern events look like, what the old ones did, how they compare, and what maybe RuneScape could learn from other games. So if you want to gain access to that episode, or you just want to vote in it, or you want to come to our roundtable that's happening this weekend, you can do all of that for as little as $1 a month. Just check us out at patreon.com/RSBNB. And it means the world to us. We also have a VIP tier for $3 a month where you'll get a VIP rank on Discord and chat channel access and access to high quality stereo versions of the podcast, in addition to everything else. And if you want to give the ultimate gift, we have an insider tier for $5 a month where you'll receive a shout out each and every week on the podcast and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to make the clip show at the end of the month. And boy, I can guarantee that there's going to be some spicy or steamy or some flashy ones in there from pre-show this week, courtesy of Zerdones and Tanis here. So if any of this sounds interesting to you, check us out at patreon.com/RSBNB. And once again, thanks everybody. It means the world to us.
Thanks.
All right. Mini quest. Emphasis on mini. Emphasis on mini. I was expecting more from these, but I'm going to let that slide because this is what a mini quest
is. Merciful.
No. And so, I mean, to be fair, I was expecting more because of what we had in Eye of Het part 1 and 2 earlier this year, but I fully understand that the mini quest can be as small as, you know, just being a little fetch quest that you're going to go out and do and have, you know, 3 or 4 steps in it. I'm 100% okay with that. I just was a little bit surprised at that. But in any case, Civil War Part 1, that starts off with poking at the Anne Dimitri Trindine anagram, of course, mentioning that it's such a funny name and whatnot for her. So obviously they took what players were talking about at the end of Daughter of Chaos and pushed forward on that. To complete this mini quest, what you have to do is you have to complete the Gross Misconduct achievement from the Wilderness update in August, which is killing 144 demons in the wilderness. And then after that, it's just a little bit of dialogue with Anne Dimitri. And then she tells you what's been going on in the wilderness since the end of Daughter of Chaos. And as it turns out, Bilrock and the Associated Forces are holding their line, but they're not gaining enough ground. And Anne Dimitri wants to actually help Bilrock by sabotaging Kirill Sutzroth's forces. And then at the end of it all, we learn that Bilrock has actually allied his forces with the werewolves of all things. And that, in a nutshell, is Civil War Part 1. Zerdones, do you have anything to add on that from a lore perspective?
It's sort of nice to see Jared again. He was kind of an interesting addition. I mean, he's originally from the novels, and it's always sort of interesting right. to see the novels get referenced. Although, of course, he did show up in... Of course. He showed up in-game in the Dishonor Among Thieves quest.
Sure did.
I don't want to get too far ahead of you, but you have a note down under Civil War II in the notes that I find very interesting, where you're speculating on what's going to be the next storyline.
Do you have speculation from Part 1, then?
Yeah, I kind of thought Mauritania would be next.
Interesting.
Because Jared has a line where he says my deal that I'm making with Bilrock is if I help you with this, you help me overthrow the vampires in Mauritania. So that sort of makes me think, maybe that's going to be what's next.
Or maybe maybe Mauritania is one of the factions. And then the other faction referenced in Civil War Part 2 is going to be the other one.
Could be.
Maybe it's going to be Fremenic versus Werewolf.
I will say I'm very here for going back to Mauritania in the Sixth Age. It's probably my number 3 top places I want to go in terms of storyline quests, just to see where they're at.
Yeah, and to be fair, this is 100% speculation here. There's nothing to say that we're doing Mauritania versus Fremenic at this point, but that's kind of where these lines are pointing, and that's kind of what happened at the end of Twilight of the Gods and through the Zamoraki and Undercity. You could kind of start to see these points of tension develop between the different Zamorakian forces.
Now you have my attention. I I am all for a werewolf on vampire slugfest. I shall pick my side and get involved.
Right, and then if the Fremenix get involved too, that adds a different extra layer to it as well.
That would also be a lot of fun. It would be nice to see the Fremenix again. We haven't seen them in a while.
No. And if they're able to pull this transition off successfully from going between civil war between Zamorakian forces and other kingdoms, so to speak, like they were talking about, and this shows that every 6 months or so they can make this pivot. And once again, speculation, this gives us hope that in the future, potentially, this can be used as a plot vehicle to wrap up the loose ends that players want to see wrapped up, which of course we know is the gnomes and the quest that shall not be named.
Yeah.
And it's almost like you would pivot maybe four times a year with four quarters and have a mix of medium and larger and smaller update. I wonder what's that sound like, Shane?
Expansions.
Oh, that dirty word again.
No, we don't say that word around these parts.
Yeah. Word that shall not be named.
All right, Civil War Part 2. Do you have anything else on Civil War Part 1, Zerdones? I feel like this was fairly simple to go through.
Yeah, this was pretty short. This was just, have you done the achievement? If not, go do the achievement.
Yeah, and same thing for Civil War Part 2, except this one is complete for Wilderness Flash events. And with this one, we need to recover Anne Dimitri's device from Nicol and the Wandering Ramuki in Edgeville, and this serves as an introduction to the Flash events. Also, interestingly enough, we see the canonization of another famous RuneScape player, this time Jaxus, who is a lore content creator and an authority on lore, who, according to their Twitter profiles, recently retired from content creation, but they're now canonized in the game. I thought that was neat seeing that pop up again, specifically in something so lore-heavy related, go for somebody in the content creators community who's known for their work on the lore side. So that's a nod that Jagex put into game there. But then Civil War Part 2 turned away from the conflict to what people were most interested in inside the Elite Dungeon, and the easiest way to say this is to quote from the mini-quest, Zamorak revealed to Raven, as said in the mini-quest, he was revealed to Raven in his full glory, and there was a certain illustration that Raven owns, and it references also a certain chaise lounger.
It's the gift that keeps on giving. They're just never going to let this one go.
Yeah, Maud Blackwitch is Majorat pinup art that made its way into Elite Dungeon 4 is now playing a role in the Civil War Part 2 quest. But aside from that, also in this quest and the certain illustration, vengeance and murder happens as well. Vengeance, of course, the forgotten warrior winds up killing Jaxus and Lux. And for those unaware, Vengeance, the Forgotten Warriors from the Vengeance Fremenix Saga, which goes way, way back.
Way back.
So that's of course where we get the idea that maybe they're pulling on something that's gonna lead to the Fremenix at some point in the future. But upon completing the achievement, Anne Dimitri says, so the rumors about Zamorak and the Chaise Lounge are true. Fascinating. And this was Anne Dimitri's primary takeaway. But
of course.
But the secondary takeaway regarding the Civil War, of course, is that vengeance could turn the tide in Bilrock's favor. So we're kind of seeing the lines about where things are gonna go when we look at the final quest in the Zamorak Civil War arc, which we know there's gonna be one more quest that's gonna wrap things up, and safe to say we'll probably see vengeance appear in it. And maybe some werewolves, kind of like we saw Adrastea appear in Extinction before moving on to Twilight of the Gods and whatnot. So that, to me, points the finger that, oh, maybe we're going to be going to deal with the Fremenix next on that. But it just shows who the final players are going to be in the Civil War arc, and I don't think there's really much else to pull from the mini-quest. I think if you were wanting the lore perspective, that's mostly it.
Yeah, that's pretty much all we had. They were definitely mini quests. I think it's nice to get a callback to the sagas. I like the sagas. I know, Shane, you don't.
Yeah.
I know not a lot of people. They don't get
They just
much
haven't
profile.
Aged very well.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't. I should have replayed Vengeance in preparation for this. Woe was me, I didn't.
Well, you're going to get a chance to on your fresh starter.
Well, they're replayable.
Oh,
so you
right.
can replay them anytime.
Okay. Yeah. See, I blocked that part out just because I didn't have a good experience when I did it.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I don't know. I mean, I should have replayed them to get an experience for the gameplay. I will say I think they're very interesting as pieces of art. Like I mentioned this the last time I was on the show. I will defend Vengeance, the saga, as a piece of art. I think it's really interesting.
Sure.
It's a really sort of creative way to recontextualize our relationship with like the dungeoneering skill, with the game in general, with gameplay tropes in general. I just think it's really cool. It's the kind of thing that I have a real weakness for.
Right. And you know, in some ways it's very traditional MMO in that regard. And that's something RuneScape doesn't do that often.
Yeah, absolutely.
So,
yeah, I mean, it's good to see those referenced, bring in some of our old characters and bring some relatively fresh faces out.
And then the question will be, what will be the puzzle that they hoist us with in the final quest? Because in Twilight of the Gods, it was Wordle, the Wordle Guardian. So what will it be next, I wonder? Or what will be the...
Well, as long as it's not the light puzzle, the blinking lights puzzle in Dungeoneering.
Okay. I thought you were going to a different light puzzle based on the quest you had just finished completing, but okay. We'll talk about that after.
We will. We will get there.
Tanis, have I piqued your interest in completing the Civil War arc?
Yeah, actually, you kind of did. I didn't expect that because I didn't really have much interest.
And see, that's the thing. When people aren't questers by nature, they're going to see mini quests and they're going to see the reward at the end that they get from this. And to be clear, the rewards you get from the mini quest, the first one, makes it so that whenever you're holding the Infernal Puzzle Box, your adrenaline doesn't decrease. And the reward from the second mini quest, Civil War Part 2, when you have the Infernal Puzzle Box, is that Brawling Gloves now give 50% extra XP.
That's pretty high, actually.
Right?
Yeah.
Come on, Tanis, the wilderness is tempting you.
Yeah, no, it does keep getting better.
It's nice to see them sort of bringing reasons to go into the wilderness. I like that. It's a good design philosophy.
I think. And once again, emphasis on mini quest, just like Eye of Het. You see, this is going to be a mini quest, right? And you think that maybe you can just space bar through this. But there's lore ramifications that you pull through if you read the dialogue of this. And we also need to talk about the visual style of Civil War Part 2, how they actually grayscaled the screen. And I don't know, did they, I don't know if you were, obviously, Tanis, you didn't see this, but did they add film grain to that?
Now that you mention it, I actually don't remember.
Okay, because I feel like I saw film grain, but it might have been something else on there. So, in any case, we look forward to what happens next. And as I mentioned, going into this, I wasn't expecting too much from too many quests. They were shorter than I expected, but now you see why when going through them that I'm okay with that. So, but the Cambridge mob strikes again. We have some more JMOD departures this week, as of course the community would say that there's definitely something going on at Jagex this week. Mod Shrike and Mod Pie have announced their departures from Jagex, and in regards to Mod Shrike, she is moving on to a new opportunity, being a narrative designer on a AAA project. And as for Mod Pie, he wrote a lengthy post that he posted on Twitter saying goodbye to the community. Of course, Mod Pie, a member of the Combat Council and always remembered for his Pymus combat fixes and whatnot. But in his post, he says that Rest assured, had the opportunity to grow not arisen, I would still be happily sitting at my desk, busting out improvements to the game for you all. Seeing you all get excited and get a kick out of what I did is the main reason why I got up and sat at this desk every day, and I will miss it greatly. And I wanted to actually highlight that sentence there, because this goes into what we talked about last time you were on Zerdones when we had the departure of Mods Raven, Lord, and Dio.
Yep.
In that, a lot of these departures are just people at this time choosing to move on to these new opportunities, and everybody who's, you know, seeing the conspiracy theories out there and seeing that the Cambridge mob is doing these kind of things, it's right there in Mod Pie's third paragraph here about the opportunity to grow, and Mod Shrike said the exact same thing about a different opportunity. And that's going to be the case for a lot of these people leaving Jagex, and people who baselessly just go along with what the community believes just needs to take a second and go back to the primary sources on these and talk about it. So,
and here you go being reasonable again, Shane.
Yeah.
Well, but that's not how the mob works.
No.
Okay?
No.
So I think, and bear with me here, maybe they knew something. And they had to be whacked. Like, maybe they were going to tell the community the real drop rates to something. Or, who knows? They were going to tell people what was behind Stone Spirits and what really drove it. They had to get whacked. They had to sleep with the fishes. Cement shoes, man. they're down. They're going to be down at the bottom of the channel.
We made them an offer they couldn't refuse.
That's right.
Better job offer at another studio.
And this is for folks who haven't listened before. We just poke fun at this because every time a J-Mod leaves or there's something weird that happens at Jagex that the community disagrees with, and it just makes no sense for when you look at it from the bottom up. We always have just pointed to this fictitious group, the Cambridge mob out there pulling the strings behind the scene. And it's just fun in these cases to kind of go back to that and say that, yeah, guys, that's what's happening. It's the Cambridge mob. It's the lizard people, as Mod Raven said.
Right. Hey, that's a whole... There's layers to this stuff, Shane. I mean, the lizard people control the Cambridge mob. Okay? Yeah, like...
Yeah.
You're talking too much. You want to get whacked? I mean, you're going to be sleeping with the fishes.
All right, on that case, let's move on then. Let's move on and talk about what the Cambridge mob doesn't want to come out, apparently. We got some big news this week on the front of the Jagex launcher. Because this is something that people had been hoping for a long time, and that's that the Jagex launcher now supports multiple accounts. And when those IT people showed up on the live stream from the platform team earlier in the year and detailed the path for the launcher, starting with open beta and then Runelite and then the Mac, and now we're at the multiple account stage. This kind of just went out quietly. I mean, there was a tweet to the release notes by one of the engineers behind it. I don't see it getting much feedback in the wider community, but lo and behold, I had to actually check to see if this was true when I logged in. And yes, the Jagex launcher now supports multiple accounts to the point where you just enter your username or email and password once, and then you get a little drop down. Which account do you want to play? And you just press a button and it loads it up. It's wonderful. Yeah.
Multi-logs too, so you can have two or three accounts logged in at the same
time.
Yeah,
that was the big question. Would it work for multiple clients? And it does.
Yep.
And this is perfect timing because even if you don't have an alt now, you're probably about to here in a few months when we all get thrown back into that cruel main world that I don't want to go back. I just want to live here in my fresh start. But this is perfect timing, like I said, because you're going to have we're all going to have a couple of accounts now running.
Absolutely. And I was surprised at how fluid it was, and then it also worked on macOS, and I was able to pop both these clients up, too, with this week.
Even on a Mac, huh?
So
how far we've come.
The team has done it. This should have been the biggest news of the week, honestly, in my point of view. I don't know why it wasn't. But if you're hearing this just now, go to jagex.com/launcher, download it if you have multiple accounts. It's going to provide a better experience for you than trying to figure out how to launch multiple clients on your computer on your own. And all I can say is that it actually just works. So I am over the moon with this.
Yeah, this could have been an update.
Like, it could have been the biggest news of the month.
Yeah, like, this could have... It could have been its own, you know, update for a week or what have you. I mean, easily.
Yeah, I'm really surprised this didn't make the
front page.
Note.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the reason this is so big is because the next step after this is Jagex accounts, and then after that, RuneScape conversion to Jagex accounts, and then the final step will be merging everything under one account. RuneScape, old school, you name it, everything. Mm-hmm. Granted, you're still going to, of course, need the individual membership for each account, but this is a step in the huge direction to just acknowledging the modern reality of RuneScape and that everybody is going to have an alt at some point or another, whether it's something they play every day or if it's something that they just, you know, check in on to go do a community event or go check out a quest or even just to play old school. Because, like, right here, if I wanted to, I could log into my fresh start account on Old School with either the official Old School or RuneLite client by just pressing a button at this point.
Yeah. Pretty nice.
And to quote the American president, this is a BFD.
That's right. Is right.
You got to admire him for being able to say those kind of things like that when it comes to getting things out there that are a big deal like this. And because of that, I just wonder why Jagex isn't jumping up and down about this more. So
yeah, I don't know. And I mean, that's just what happens when you get old, right? You just don't care.
What do you mean?
You start forgetting things more.
Well, you just call things how it is, right? Like you don't.
We're talking about the president still?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, fair. Yeah. And just to kind of piggyback on this, to bring it all back as to why this is actually interesting, there was also an engine update this week that made it so that us Mac users can now actually turn off VSync, believe it or not, which is something we couldn't do in the past. And
couldn't turn off VSync?
No, we couldn't turn off VSync. So we were capped to 60 FPS on macOS.
What kind of Apple BS?
Well, it was something to do with
craziness is that.
It was something to do with the Jagex engine.
Wow.
They also enabled multi-threaded rendering on iOS, which means that iOS devices, particularly anything that's not a modern flagship iOS device, should see a performance boost on mobile.
Okay, that's good.
So that and the Jagex launcher were two of the biggest pieces of news that were talked about this week, but really didn't garner much coverage. And it's so important because from a strategic perspective, it increases account security. It paves the way for that unified Jagex account after. And it moves people into, let's just say, the Jagex ecosystem for them so that they don't need to worry about if they're installing a dodgy client from somewhere.
Yes, because, I mean, let's face it, even if we never get any other new IP, I mean, we know we are, but even if we didn't, these different kind of versions of RuneScape, I think people are enjoying. So having the different accounts, this was something that we really needed. You know, if nothing else, just on a quality of life basis, because we're going to, I fully anticipate this continuing, right? Like, no matter what people said in the beginning, Fresh Start has been a complete success. Like, I hadn't looked at the high scores until today.
It's like 17,000 people ranked in Farm.
Yes!
People. Loads of people doing it.
Yes! I'm like, ha. Huh.
So much for everybody thought that this was going to be a drop in the bucket, eh?
Hey, like yelling in the wind, right?
But in any case, Jagex Launcher, updated to support multiple accounts. If you have multiple accounts and you haven't been using it, now is the time to start. jagex.com/launcher. So with that, let's move on to our patch notes this week. We don't have too many of them, but definitely an interesting one to start off for the fresh starters, because it's now possible to trade Fresh Start World Halos, Familiar Appearance Tokens, and Inverted Skilled Cape Tokens with Iron Man accounts. Previously, they wouldn't have been able to, so they'll be able to get those on the other end once Fresh Start ends or when somebody moves back to the main world. And Halo and Familiar Appearance Tokens can now also be traded on the Grand Exchange. This is going to be interesting, because I imagine some of these are going to be quite expensive.
Oh, yeah. I would imagine. That's if you even want to come off of them.
Yeah, or give them away. I know I'm definitely not giving away my Brains token or my Cape token to anybody that I got so far, but more on that later.
No.
Spoilers. You remember the Dine Arrows and how they took so long to craft?
Mm-hmm.
They slightly tweaked them. They made it so that they're now imbued slightly faster to prevent the logout timer from activating. There's a point where if you had a huge enough stack of these Dine Arrows, you would get logged out when the action was happening.
Wow.
So what they did is they say the amount of XP given per stack has been reduced by the same proportion to maintain the same XP per hour. So they're just done in smaller batches so they don't hit the login or the logout timer barrier.
Okay.
That makes sense.
Yeah. They also moved where the Abyssal Scourge stacks build in the combat system. That's the tier 92 whip, and they will now apply via Essence of Finality specials and against NPCs that have fake health bars, so like Zamorak's red bar, for example. Magma Tempest target ability now fixed and triggers correctly when being targeted. Updates on your daily challenge progress are now displayed in the chat box, but only for challenges, which will give a progress update. And there's another interesting one here on this that affected Fresh Start as well. And I have to jump down to the end of the patch notes for this one. But stacking Whirligig Scarabs will now fill Hunter Urns, provide strange rocks, and count towards daily challenge progress. So what this means is that this is now the fastest Hunter daily challenge, in that you just go grab one and then you just click, bing, bing, and away you go, and you're done. And you're done your Hunter daily challenge in 30 seconds or less. So Hunter has just become one of the fastest daily challenges in the game at Hetz Oasis.
Well, that's good, because he wants to really do Hunter.
Exactly.
Yep.
And you know, we talked about in Fresh Start Week 1 just how much Hetz Oasis had an impact on early level Hunter, and thank God for that. But it looks like Fresh Start has also impacted the Nexus, in that the length of time before the stream becomes inactive in the Nexus has been increased, and the amount of corruption that can be stored in the charmed sack in the Nexus is now also displayed in the tooltip. And for anybody unaware, the Nexus is the prayer training method in the Lumbered Swamp that is free to play and low to mid level at best.
Yeah, it's good to like what I want to say like 40 maybe, something like that.
Yeah, it's 50,000 XP in total. So you can start it at level 1 and it will get you up to 43.
Okay, that's what I was thinking. You know, when I first was starting Fresh Start, the old, I thought I remembered the Pale Wisp being down there. And so I went through there and I saw that, and I was so tempted of sitting there and doing it for a while, but I was on a mission, so I figured out that the colony had been moved and I found it. But
and yeah, that's the whole thing with Fresh Start. We're learning so much about the base game.
Uh-huh.
And people say that before this said that the base game and mid game were dead, but far from the truth. Go ahead, Sir Down.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was just going to say it was interesting seeing the Nexus crop up in these patch notes because, yeah, like it is, it's quite good early game prayer XP. And it's something that that not a lot of the player base sees anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know when exactly it came out,
right,
but I'm sure it was long after most
long
of us
time
were
ago.
Past 43 prayer.
And I want to know, and this goes to that, you know, onboarding of the new players and such. And I didn't do any of the tutorials on my fresh start, obviously. I'm wondering, is there any sort of onboarding that points players to the Nexus with prayer?
I'm not sure. I know the NPC, I don't remember her name, but she has one of the skill tutor medallions above her head, so she does kind of stand out.
Okay.
So there is that.
Okay, so that's got to be hooked into a path system somewhere then.
I'd imagine so, but I don't know for sure.
Yeah, all right.
I mean, either way, like she does stand out in even in Lumbridge Swamp. She is quite noticeable, and it's going to be attention grabbing. Like, oh, hey, what's this? I'm going to go check this out.
Yeah, yeah. And the last patch note, the Master Completionist Cape and its trim variant will now appear correctly in the wardrobe. That was another pain point from the Master Comp Cape and Master Max Cape a couple of weeks back.
Nice.
Good fix.
All right. Onwards to Mod Jack's live stream, the second in his series that he's calling JMod Sessions. This week was about drop tables. And he brought the medicine, Tanis.
He dropped it like it's hot.
Yeah, this was a spicy one.
It really was. It really was. And, you know, I think everybody who has questions about how RuneScape is balanced, has questions about where PVM sits in the game, and has questions about how to lay feedback out to JMods, has to watch these first two JMod sessions. Mod Shogun joined Mod Jack on this one, and this one did not disappoint. So I'm just going to go through this quickly here. Over the last number of years, and this is how we started off, over the last number of years, PVM has dropped skilling supplies and sometimes finished items. And as people kill bosses more and more, these drop tables become less valuable. True. Mm-hmm. And there was a question that was asked. If someone wants herbs, does the person go to the skill, the farming skill, or go to the boss that drops the most herbs in large quantities to get herbs? And right now, according to the analytics and how everything is set up, bosses are the better raw source for those materials presently.
And that's obvious. I mean, yep. Oh my god. I felt
just look at
so
anybody. Look at just
validated.
Anybody who, you know, goes and kills 2449 Telos, right? That thing drops like Lantatimes, Toadflax, and whatnot.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, when I was going for 120 Herb, like, and I was getting hundreds of Lantadimes, Dwarfweeds, Torstoles, where was I going? I wasn't going farming. I wasn't doing farm runs. I'm going to God Wars 2. Hellweir and Vindicta and Furies.
Yeah, exactly.
That's where the herbs are.
And he said that as an Iron Man, it makes sense to do that. Go kill bosses and whatnot for your herbs. But he said for mains, the people killing the boss are doing it for the rare drops, and they're doing it for the money. And while doing this, they're generating these rare supplies. And then with that, you can just use the money you generate and then use that to buy whatever you want from the drop table. Mm-hmm. So with this, and this is the strategy he alluded to previously in the last live stream, is that Mod Jack will be rolling out a high-level design strategy, and he started bringing that to the devs this week. And the core essence of it is that skills should not fall into uselessness, and bosses should not be able to render skills redundant. And in terms of content, this will push the balance towards fixes, not necessarily ninja-style fixes or full reworks, because ninja fixes are targeted at the QOL issues, but they're going to be releasing some updates that will experiment with this in touching this balance.
I felt so validated from how I felt. I knew I was right. I knew we were right. And we have been proven right, and I've been so tired of a loud, vocal minority just railroading every JMod that comes around and tries to talk some sense, and it happened with Mod Jack. So this was music to my freaking ears.
Yeah, and, like, and he said that somebody that says they don't like something, or 20 people in Twitch chat, or a person posting on Reddit, doesn't tell him much as a designer. What tells him more is the actions of the 100,000 players or so through the game's analytics.
Ooh. Ooh. Oh, give me more.
Yes.
I thought he had a really great comment about how he was seeing someone posting on Reddit about, like, oh, Jagex only cares about driving engagement, as though that were a bad thing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, Jagex makes updates to make people play the game. They want people playing updates. Shocker, this is how capitalism works. Welcome to Earth.
And people don't realize this, but developers in general are one of the higher paid fields. And you're not just going to go invest these guys on something that's not going to have a return on investment.
Oh, absolutely. Uh-oh. Absolutely. And, it's a complete waste of money.
Yeah, and just because, look, I'm sure everyone thinks how they play is the majority of how the game is played. But it's not. We all have our bubbles. You know, I think RuneScape is a game that has a decent mix. You know, I don't know why people would find RuneScape such an engaging combat game, but I know 20-30% of the players do. Okay, that's cool. But there's always been this quiet, large population out there just as big that wasn't vocal and
isn't on Twitch.
Yes. And they're just as important. And finally, the analytics are backing that up. And I just think this is healthy, right? Like this is healthy. You can't honestly sit here and think like that boss is dropping skilling supplies in the way that they're doing is a good thing. I think we've talked about this on Bits before, like 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Like this is
the economy of PVM monthly bit.
Right. Yeah. And it's never made much sense. And they've always been afraid to do it because the minute you cause the slightest amount of pain, people just lose their minds. But this is something, you know, that everybody is going to take a little bit of medicine on, and as it should be, right? Like, look, one of my favorite skills is Slayer. Slayer was one of, like, when I was maxing, it was one of the only and best ways that I could make money being someone that couldn't really boss.
Right, and they're toning down the amount of herbs that come in through Slayer, and a few of the Slayer mobs are having herbs removed.
Which it should be, right? Like, it absolutely. Yeah. You know, so would that take that down for me? Yeah, but it should be.
And what Mod Jack said is it's not intended to punish PVM, but if that's the best solution we have, then that's the best solution there's going to be.
And yeah, I mean, sometimes you have to nerf. You just have
and
to
they
nerf.
Wouldn't, exactly. None. I'm sorry, but no one that's going to whine and cry about this would care at all when, you know, skilling gets the big
like
nerf.
Like when your turtles were nerfed.
Yeah. Or, well, many things in the past. Yeah. But yeah.
And to get to the point, November's update is going to be a farming update that's worked on by Mod Shogun and Mod Sponge. And this is the important bit, Mod Sponge has become known as the drop table guy in all of the recent bosses, Zamorak and Elder God Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And the change being made is a basic one that makes farming the larger source of herbs, in that bosses are going to have their herb drops removed and have their seed drops raised where it needs to be raised. Herb farming
will
also
be, it should be.
Herb farming will also be made easier, being able to plant multiple herbs in one patch, use the seeds more quicker, as in the more seeds you use, the more base lives your herbs will get. The herbs won't be able to die anymore. They can still get diseased, which retains the use of the pharmacology relic. There'll also be an earnable item that takes herb growing time down from 80 to 60 minutes.
See, those are all great changes. And for any doubters out there, let me just bring this. We have an example of this in-game that has already worked, and it just so happened to be a Mod Jack update. But do you remember pre-mining and smithing ore came into the game through drops like crazy.
Right.
Now the primary source of ore and bars is actually through the skill. Did that kill anybody? Has that hurt anyone out there?
I mean, I don't know that that's a fantastic example, because like Mutt Jack talks about the Stone Spirit issue a little bit later on, and I think that whole conversation is very interesting. One of the thoughts I had in the back of my mind was, like, yeah, you're right. Ores and bars are now coming into the game through skilling, and finished smithing goods are coming into the game through smithing and not through dropping. But how many people are still using smithed items?
Right.
Like, I think that's another problem that needs to be solved, is higher tier weapons and armor are still coming into the game almost exclusively through PVM. Slayer, in the case of some things like Serenic and Ascension.
The tier 92 whip.
Yeah.
Tier 92 and whip too, yep.
And to me, that's a little bit different, because when I'm looking at this, I'm looking at like scaling supplies, I'm looking on gaining XP, you know, training.
Yeah.
And Stone Spirits, that's a... my opinion, we didn't need
and,
them.
And we'll get to the Stone Spirit discussion after on this.
That was only to ease people's minds. They weren't necessary ever from the beginning.
And to be fair, this was a lot of the discussion that also happened in Twitch chat during this live stream, because it was a live stream that he was managing on his own that he had help with from Mod Shogun. And the response to one of the questions was about that same general path. He said, if the farming skill has no purpose in game because PVM removes the need for that skill existing, I don't see how that's a good vision for RuneScape. Then he said to the person, if you don't like that change, I'd be interested to hear other visions. If you think RuneScape should be a bossing only game, then I'd be interested to hear what your vision of RuneScape and RuneScape content is.
If RuneScape's a bossing only game, that's hard for me to fathom. I mean, you play other games too.
Not the current version of RS, maybe an RS4.
But this just isn't that kind of game.
I feel like it's not a fatal problem for RuneScape
to
become a PVM-only game. I mean, and this is something Mojack sort of touched on in the live stream. RuneScape used to be a PvP-focused game. And that changed. And we survived that change. That was fine. I think, in theory, the game could pivot into being mostly PVM. I think that would be a bad thing for two reasons. First reason is that the combat system is just very clunky compared to other MMOs.
Yeah.
But the other problem is, from a business standpoint, the differentiating factor of RuneScape is... there are a couple, but one of the big ones are the skills. Like, the other MMOs out there are primarily combat-based, for the most part.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so
the primary loop is largely combat.
Yes.
So I play The Old Republic. It's very combat-heavy. Mm-hmm. WoW is very combat-heavy. I have not seen... and I don't know, maybe Final Fantasy XV is a little bit like this. I don't know. Maybe New Worlds is a little like this. I don't know. But I've not seen another MMO... that does non-combat content the way RuneScape does.
Precisely.
Yeah, even New World is, I mean, it does a better job. But I've always said that's what you should expect from a RuneScape 4. It still doesn't do what we have here. And, like, could it be a PVM-focused game? I guess, but I could never see this. I could never see RuneScape, a point-and-click game with a tick system, ever being as good as a game where I actually have to duck and dodge and get out of the way.
Yeah,
and actually fight.
And it'll never compare to like a Dark Souls,
right?
Or even to a WoW.
And I just need to touch on this, because I don't know if I mentioned this on the show before, but as you guys know, everybody listening to the show for a while knows that I got heavily into PVM with the Elder God Wars content. To the point where I have pretty much done everything for Reaper Crew minus Rise of the Six, but that's mainly because I just been too busy tracking down other things in RS that I haven't bothered to get the group together. And it got to a point where I was comfortable enough to pretty much do most of the PVM content out there that I wanted to do. And I thought to myself, I'd like to play PVM in a support role. I'd like to play PVM in a slightly more interactive role. I can't do that in RS. I need to go elsewhere for PVM. And that's what happened in about May of this year in terms of when I stopped my Reaper tasks and whatnot and just started playing RuneScape largely how I previously did with a focus on mass cab raids as being my primary source of PVM that I do these days. And you guys are entirely right that RuneScape could make that pivot, but it would be an awkward pivot to make because of that combat system. And as a result of that, we need to focus on the skills, and that's precisely what is being done and what the analytics are following here with this, with what was said,
because
it's going to be in this update.
Well, and you don't pivot for 20-30% of the player base.
No,
sorry, but that doesn't make sense, because I believe that you want to emphasize what makes you different in a brand, right? What makes you stand out, and what makes us stand out is we have 28 skills. Like, there are not other games out there like that. Or they might pay... Look, ESO plays lip service to skills, but they're not. They're not. Like, it's not like...
No,
here.
You
and,
go
and
pick
a lot
up
of games
a few skill
like
points and away you go, right?
Exactly. Like, RuneScape is very unique like that. There just isn't a lot else, even in the same ballpark. So it's like,
and that's why Melver Idol became such a popular thing, because it scratched that RuneScape itch without being RuneScape. And Jagex published the damn game because of that.
Yeah.
So, just to get back to the live stream with this, and this is Mod Jack, the typical Mod Jack that we always say, and this is why I think everybody should listen to these live streams. He says what needs to be said. You might not like it, but you need to hear it. He says, what someone is saying in chat, I don't want to do this regarding the skill update. He said, this isn't a problem. Don't do it. The farming skill is optional. People who do farming will make more money.
I love it.
Yeah.
And I love it because how many times have we heard that? How many times has it been like, well, your XP just got cut in half and you go on. And more often than not, you look back and be like, yeah, that was probably healthy.
Yeah.
It hurt. You know, and so it's this time, everybody's taking some medicine.
Yeah, and that's what you said. Mm-hmm. In terms of taking medicine, the Slayer mobs will do that. They'll retain their herb drops. They'll be toned down, but Vire Lords, Abyssals, and Grove creatures will have their herb drops removed.
Removed or reduced?
I thought they were removing from those three and then just toning the rest down. I thought that's what was happening.
That could be
pending confirmation.
Yeah, the sense I got from Shogun was that they were reducing the amount on some mobs.
Okay.
So the sense I got was that Vire Lords, Grove Creatures, those guys, their herb drops would be reduced.
Okay.
And Abyssals.
Okay.
They'd be reduced and most other things would be untouched.
All right,
but
fair.
I could be misunderstanding too. We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out when we get the dev log for this, because obviously they weren't planning on revealing this, but he did. And I have yet to crunch the numbers on this, but the way it'll work is that if you plant one seed, your herbs will have a base life of 3, and that'll grow up to, with 10 seeds planted, you'll get 15 base lives, and then compost and the secateurs and all that factors into some math and whatnot. I haven't actually crunched the numbers on this yet, but based on this, if I had to guess, probably be looking at somewhere between 4 and 5 times the amount of herbs received if you put 10 seeds in compared to the base one. If I remember how the math works correctly.
And let's not overlook that, right? It's making that part of it even better. It's making the farming part better.
Yeah, that's ultimately more herbs coming into the game.
Right.
It is a net gain overall.
And this is going to be perfect for Fresh Start, Because keep in mind, Fresh Start is going till January, and we're getting this in November. So for people who want to train Herblore for double XP and Fresh Start, is going to be able to benefit from this. Because that's one of our problems in Fresh Start right now, is that we lack herbs.
We lack a lot of things. Don't get me... We'll talk about invention later.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have it any other way.
and then we got to the Stone Spirit discussion about this. He said that Stone Spirit solved the problem that they intended to solve but had unfortunate consequences, in that there's so many of them in the game, and that they make some boss drops worthless. Because when you get Stone Spirits, it's like, hell, Stone Spirits.
And yeah, they solved the... they solved the problem with giving whiners something so they wouldn't whine, and then they whined anyway. So, it ended up being pointless. And then they came up with a good way of, you know, making them
with
useful
the perfect juju
with
and
mining.
Whatnot.
Yeah. You know, but that came later. So, I mean, we got to a place where they were usable, but I've always seen Stone Spirits as just a way to make certain vocal communities less vocal with the mining smithing update when it came.
Well, I mean, they make sense as a reward,
yeah.
But I mean, the core problem with them is that there's only like three or four of them that are worth using.
Yeah, and that's the problem. Everybody, you said there's more stone spirits in the economy than everybody needs, and when you start talking about things like bronze and coal and tin stone spirits, I can tell you how many thousands of those I have in my bank that aren't ever going to get used.
So, oh, yeah. I mean, 99% of stone spirits I don't pick up anymore.
Yeah.
I think it's basically at the point where it's only the Animica spirits that are even worth caring about. Like, even Bane spirits have
I use the Rune and Luminite ones on Yak Track, low-level Yak Track tasks when I need to restock my Rune bar supply.
Well, those you can still use because of Elder Rune Bar.
Exactly.
I can tell you.
Yeah.
I can attest. But Zardones is right. Like, you're not mining Bane. What are you mining Bane for? Like, if you're at the Animica level, you're done. You don't need to do Bane anymore. I mean, you still need Rune and Luminite because that goes in Elder bars, but yeah.
And it was at this point that chat shifted to about how Stone Spirits could be fixed, and it's not the worst thing in the game, it's just not the highest priority that the team wants to put on it. And apparently there's a whole skilling design section in the official Discord as well.
Yeah, there's a couple little design channels that Mod Jack is in fairly frequently. I'm not active in them, but I just...
No, and I was thinking after this, it might be a good idea to take a cruise through some of those and see what's happening, because his work with the lore community when he was in charge of story in the lore channels was always something interesting to see. So, but let's see. The next big comment was that if you only care about PVM and don't care about anything else, then no other problem that isn't a PVM drop table seems important. And he says that, I don't want to reject that perspective, but we have to be careful about the health of the game as a whole.
Loved this comment.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want that on a t-shirt.
And yes. Like, I feel like, and it's not just the PVMers who are at fault of this. I feel like everybody who is a hardcore player in one aspect or another, whether it be the skilling community, the PVM community, cluers, whatever you might have, questers even with lore, feel that their niche of the game needs to be the top priority. But in reality, it has to be about that whole of game approach, which it's good to hear here. And, you know, Tanis, I was thinking back to the discussions and whatnot that have been carried out about this. It seems as though we're kind of getting the best of both worlds here, with Mod Jack as lead designer in the role and how he's taking on the role. It definitely seems as though it's going to be one where we're getting new episodic content, but also one where the pain points of the game that have been highlighted over the last number of years are still being worked on and iterated on.
Yeah, it definitely has that feel to it. And of course, you know, whatever, if you're hardcore into anything, that's, you know, that's what your focus is. But I think we try to preach that balanced approach because
right, and I mean it speaks to the panelists we have on. If it's a PVM update, David's going to be there. If it's a systems mm-hmm. design, it's going to be Sirion. If it's going to be something that involves numbers, it's going to be Thaxi. If it's lore, it's going to be Zerdones or Questscaping, right?
Right, because when this game is at its absolute best is when we have ecosystems that are interacting and interdependent on yeah. each other, where yeah. mm-hmm. no matter what kind of a player you are, you need the other people. And they need you.
And that's the special sauce of RuneScape.
Yep.
In mm-hmm. it not being a combat only game.
Yeah, yeah, I mean that's what always appealed to me about it, is you could just do whatever. You could do whatever you wanted. If you don't want to go kill stuff, you can go and make bows. You can go and mine.
My skill peer is a viable account. It just got a little yeah. bit painful without porters.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Just as long as you don't do any of the things that accidentally give you combat XP.
Exactly. And, you know, that's gotten easier to do over the years, but that's a topic for a different day. And then he said over the last number of years with PVM drop tables, it's become a high priority to make sure that the PVM drop tables are massively profitable. And that's led to a very PVM focused attitude. And the point here isn't to ruin PVM, because it's unlikely that we'll ever see skilling outpace PVM in terms of profitability. It's just to kind of rejigger that balance a little bit.
Well, because it has an outsized influence, because think about it, and this is why, right? For what little presence RuneScape has on Twitch, it only either has cam girls or PVM. That is it. So when people see RuneScape, they see people doing PVM, which to me gives it this artificial kind of, you know, inflation of what kind of a role yeah. that plays in the game, and when most people are, I mean, they're doing some dailies, they're doing some Reapers, they're doing this, they're doing that. It's a mix, you know, but you never see that on Twitch.
I think there's also an element of like new players coming in from World of Warcraft going, okay, what's the equivalent of this is where it'd be really helpful if I knew anything about World of Warcraft, but what's the equivalent of some raids boss that I can do
right.
in this game?
They come from other games. And we only got four of those, and those are the elite dungeons.
Yeah, mm-hmm. or, I mean, they go and they can do Solak or whatever, but like they go for what they know, and the closest thing to what they know from other games is PVM. Mm-hmm. Also, right. like, from a mechanical perspective, there's really nothing else that brings in as many resources. Nothing really ever can bring in as many resources as PVM in the
yep.
game.
Yeah,
and that's another thing that Mod Jack kind of touched on, is like just especially given how efficient we've become at PVM, like mm-hmm. we're at the point where you can kill a boss 100 times an hour. Look at Hellweir. If you can kill Hellweir 100 times an hour, he drops what, like 30 Lantidimes uncommonly.
Yeah.
In an hour, you're bringing in hundreds, thousands of herbs. That's more you can ever do from farming.
Bingo. And that's why this whole discussion happens. And I feel, and I appreciate that we got the early heads up on this update, because it makes our lives easier here at the podcast, knowing what's coming rather than, you know, waiting until there's a blog post and whatnot. You know, a week or two notice is always good for us. But mm-hmm. I feel like discussing these drop table changes in relation to this update kind of sidetracked the stream a bit. And if anything, I hope that the discussion on farming was helpful for painting the picture about why drop tables can't just be, you know, hugely profitable in one direction from PVM. So, other questions that were asked, why not pull this change? Simple answer. Players wouldn't pass a nerf pull, and he wants to do another stream in the future on pulls, actually. Interestingly enough, that'll be a fun one.
Yeah, I cannot wait for that one.
He's going to take a detour next time for lore, but another in general, one I'm looking forward to. Yeah. These are turning out to be really good. And you know, when it comes to communication, who knew that this is what we needed in terms of just, you know, hearing a bit of about what the general direction of the game is going to be. So, but
yeah, this is doing such a good job, that's like saying like, well, why don't you pull fundamental rights? Because they're rights, and you can't do that.
Right, and he even made the distinction that old school doesn't pull game health updates because the game needs them.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because players will never pass a nerf. Players hate nerfs.
But
which is understandable, but still. Yeah.
And he said when they look at what kind of content needs to come into the game, they look at what existing players want, but also what could bring lapsed players back. And
which is very important.
And I want to know with Fresh Start how many of these tens of thousands of people playing that are ranked in skills like farming are new, or people who are from RS3. I want to know that. But
yep.
These ModJack streams are the streams that the community needs to hear. And I've already relayed this feedback to ModJack that the community needs to hear these more than they're being seen out there. So it should be no surprise that we appreciate that, and we're fans of the way ModJack communicates.
Yeah, these are
we
great.
Have been from the beginning.
Yeah, like you said, Tanis, everybody's taking their medicine this week, and the core of it comes with ModJack is that he's gonna tell you what needs to be said and what you need to hear, but you might not like it.
Yep.
So
these are my favorite streams since Mod Stew was doing his tutorial.
Okay, all right.
These are the best. I love these.
Well, speaking of Fresh Start, we do need to take a bit of a detour for that. So let's begin with that. Zerdones, what have you been up to on Fresh Start?
Oh, let me pull my notes up
here. Okay, so you're keeping notes just as I am. All right.
Well, had to remind myself what I've been doing. So I've been questing, obviously. I am questing hard. As of today, as of about 2 hours before we started recording, I am at 342 quest points. Last quest I did was the infamous Morning's End Part 2, the famous light puzzle.
Oof.
Yep. It actually wasn't. It's not too bad with a guide. It's helpful. Also, like because our combat has been buffed so high, yep. the shadows the regen, really aren't. Yeah. Well, the regen, but also like our like the hit chance has changed. Our offensive capabilities have changed. The shadows are basically no threat anymore. They're just a minor nuisance. So it's not actually that bad. Actually, what I hated. Morning's End Part 1. Screw that quest. Redying the sheep? Terrible. That's horrible.
Oh, yeah.
Why is that terrible?
Oh, God, they don't... Oh, man, well, yeah, they don't
it's
move.
It's a terrible interface.
Mm-hmm.
You get a tiny little viewport. Like, if you look up the quest on the wiki, you can see what the interface is. But this tiny little viewport that you move with the arrow keys... but the arrow keys don't move you directly in the cardinal directions. They sort of move you in ways that are not obvious how it works. And then sometimes they just won't move you in a direction for no clear reason. And it's so slow to move, and the sheep are moving around while you're trying to, A, figure out what you're looking at through the tiny little viewport, and then, B, trying to get the damn thing centered so you can shoot them with the...
Oh,
mm-hmm.
And I'd imagine in many cases that's a relic of the old fixed UI that was really never made.
Yeah, it's very much a relic of 2004.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not great. But besides that, I have got my Halo of Returning. I got that on
October
8th.
Wow, that's early.
Yep, October 8th. I got that. Today, I hit 20,000 progress points. So that's all of the unlocks. And I got my first pet today.
Which one?
Nice!
Archaeology.
Oh, that's a good one.
It is a good one. 140,000 XP. I was excavating in Karadet. Wasn't even restoring an artifact.
That's an amazing week.
Awesome. Yeah.
It's a good week. It's been a good week. I've still got a lot of quests to go, but it's been a good week.
I don't know.
Very cool.
I don't know if any of us are going to top that.
Is there anything else?
I don't know. No. Well, not for me. I will say the world first quest point cape was achieved on October 13th. It wasn't me. I've seen a couple of other broadcasts since then, so there's definitely a few people who have them by now. But no, that's all for me.
Yeah, and you know, when you think about it, that inverted quest cape is actually probably going to be one of the rarer ones, because I don't think many people are going to be out there on that quest cape push. So
no, I don't think so.
No, I mean, look at the skeleton.
You have to commit to it.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Just for Plague Zen, dude, those skill racks, man. 75 Plague Zen, herb lore.
Within the Light.
Yeah.
80 and all of those skills. Ooh. Again.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, if you're doing the quest cape, you're not doing anything else.
Right. You're focusing around the skills and the quests around it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All right. Tanis, tell us about Invention and the Pains.
So I finally unlocked Invention this week, and I've never played as an Iron Man before, so I never realized just how difficult Invention is without a market. but it's rough. I have struggled to get components, just very simple things like making augmenters. Very difficult. Like, I thought, you know, if I can just get up to, you know, I think it's like 22 or something, then that opened up being able to make, you know, the pyromatics and the hammertrons the rotomatics, you know, all my skill and stuff, and be able to augment, you know, my hatchets and stuff like that. But I didn't realize just, you know, how many augmenters I was going to need, and how hard it is to get the components for those things. You know, I tried doing the whole go around the store, the shops thing, breaking stuff down.
No.
It didn't work out well. So then I resorted to, I'm making my own stacks of stuff and breaking it down. Now that works better. But, you know, obviously it takes time for prepping. What I am happy about, though, is, you know, I've already started gaining pieces for my mining outfit. I can get pieces for my divination outfit. So, anything with 80s, I can make those, or I can start gaining pieces for those outfits and make those outfits, which is really nice. And then I've also spent some time, a little bit of time, just prepping urns. That's something I'm used to just going to GE, picking up.
Yeah, I need to talk to you about that when you have the ability to do it. And I need to figure out if I have the magic level to tap in on that. But continue.
Yeah, well, I mean, urns are just, it's a core skilling supply that I always used in the main game. But I've always just went and picked them up. So a little bit different here, obviously. You know, you got to make them and fire them all and do all that stuff yourself. But I made a couple hundred of each of the kind that I was going to be using, you know, fishing, wood cutting, mining. I even did some cooking, I think. Or no, I didn't do cooking. I didn't have the crafting level for that. I think it was 81. Anyway, so that was pretty much my week, and I am up to 87 mining. So,
We are moving up.
But yeah, so I'm just and I'm still just loving it. Like, I don't want to go back. Like, I just want to stay here forever. I want to stay here in this new economy and this new ecosystem and just never leave. Like, can we get one server, guy? Can we get one server, Jagex? Like, do we have to go? I don't want to go. I want to stay here.
Interesting.
I don't know. I want my Halo.
Yeah, that's true. Halo Archie. That's true. We want our Halos, Archies, and whatnot. That's amazing. And, you know, Invention is always going to be a roadblock with that. What level did you say Invention you were at right now?
I am at 25.
Okay, so you're two levels away from when the good stuff begins. And, you know, on my skill pier, to contrast this with how you have done it, I waited until I had the protean items on my skill pier, and I just used protean cogs to 27 on my skill pier. That's how I did
that. That's something you can do.
Yeah, which we can't here in Fresh Start.
Obviously. We can't do
that. Well, we have, you get some for free.
But not enough.
No, I don't know how many you get, but I mean, cogs like 50. Terrible XP.
Yeah, so. Okay, last weekend I was at 96 farming. Presently, I am closing in on level 101 farming. 797K away from 101 farming right now. So yes, that means this past week I got 99 farming. I got 99 on Tuesday, which brought me up to rank 21 last I checked, believe it or not. And it's been kind of ping-ponging around that 20 to 30 range, depending on what was going on. But I always get a big boost whenever I turn in animals and such, because I do have all three pens at the Manor Farm going now. At level 102, this will be a big unlock. I can move from frogs to salamanders at the ranch out of time. I did some Archglacier this week to unlock War's Retreat, zero mechanic Archglacier, printed some blue charms. So if I ever want to do summoning here, that's going to be an easy way of doing that. But in general, it has just been farming at Het's Oasis with sporadic checks in at the Manor Farm and the ranch out of time, with the occasional wood and fruit tree thrown in. I don't feel like it's worth the money when the seeds are 150K a pop for a magic seed for about 20,000 XP for a tree. I don't feel like that's worth it for me right now, so I'm not really leaning in too much on those. But I did enter into a contract with a few people to farm them avocado and dragon fruit, because they want that for primal pulp and whatnot. So the idea behind that is that I get to farm the stuff and then they receive the goods at the end of the day. And that's what we thought we'd see on Fresh Start. Those kind of agreements coming in where people are just in it for the XP, or people are, you know, in it for the produce at the end of the day. So that's been a fun thing that I was able to sort through on that. I also did take a run last Friday with Mage God, another one of our community members, through the first part of Elite Dungeon 3, witnessed how broken that is for XP in the span of an hour, went from 40 to 80 magic in defense.
Wow. Yeah, it is pretty good, huh?
Yeah. And I wanted that because I wanted a decent combat skill. I'll do it again with ranged at some point, and maybe the melee stats with that as well. But that's all been going on, and the push right now is just to get 101 farming and carry on. I'm really actually liking the inverted non-master farming cape. I think this will be the one that I wear on the main game if I ever wear the non-master cape again, because it's actually kind of like a nice, almost olivey green color. And then we'll get a nice deep forest green on the trim once it becomes trimmed. So I'm actually a fan of this inverted cape. So just like the both of you, having a really good time with this, and Het's Oasis is the perfect kind of thing to just have up on the second screen, and AFK running is doing other things on the computer and whatnot. So really been having a good time with Fresh Start Worlds as we head into week 4, believe it or not. So.
That's awesome. Yeah, I definitely don't play Fresh Start Worlds during meetings at work ever.
That's it's kind of easy to do on mobile, isn't it?
It sure is.
And just for everybody wondering, I'm currently sitting at rank 22.
Nice.
Wow, very nice.
All right, let's do our achievements and start wrapping up the show.
All right, well, we're going to start off the Fresh Start Worlds achievements with our very own Shaney with 99 farming on the 19th there. Good job, buddy.
Thank you.
And then we also have Jingles FSW1 with 99 defense on the 12th. So good job, Jingles.
Nicely done. Then moving on back into the normal world, we have Swaboosh with 120 archaeology on the 19th, XOX Scotty XOX with 120 agility, Mr. M with 99 engineering on the 16th, and Shadow Lad with 120 invention on the 16th as well.
And on October 15th, we have Jack BLG with 120 invention. And then on the 13th, big day, we have Atmahua with 120 thieving, Donna with 99 archaeology, JRNE Draw, 120 farming, and Samurai Jack, 120 woodcutting, all on the 13th.
Nicely done, everybody. Nicely done. All right. So before we wrap up, we do pick of the week where somebody shares, in this case, a book that they've found interesting. And Zerdones has quite the book for us this week.
Yeah, I think this is kind of an interesting book. So it's a nonfiction book. The name is The Irregulars. It is a biography of Roald Dahl, who is most famously children's author, famously of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and many, many others. That's the one probably everybody knows, but he has a lot of others. But before that, this book focuses on his role in World War II. He was originally an Air Force pilot, and then he was mustered out of the Air Force, I believe, for an injury, and was picked up. He was already a sort of a minor celebrity at the time, because fact fans, he popularized the idea of gremlins. He wrote a children's book about gremlins, which were an urban legend in the British Air Force.
Yeah.
Like a thing that you attribute, like, oh, my plane won't start, must be gremlins, that kind of thing. So if you're a fan of that movie from the 80s, you have Roald Dahl to thank. So he was a minor celebrity for that, and he got picked up by British intelligence to act as a spy in the United States. So he spent most of the war in Washington, D.C., as a spy, with the primary goal of trying to combat anti-interventionist sentiment in the United States, or trying to get the U.S. to support entering the war. He did this primarily by going to a lot of fancy parties and sleeping with a lot of other men's wives. And if you've seen a picture of Roald Dahl, you'll know why that's so surprising. But I guess being a celebrity in the 40s really went a long way there. But I don't know. I find it it's a very interesting book. It's interesting. I find that kind of wartime espionage on.
It's real. It's not the Hollywood-y stuff, right?
It's real. That being said, actually, it's interesting that you bring that up, because Roald Dahl's boss was Sir William Stevenson, who is a Canadian. I always have to point that out because I'm a Canadian. We like to recognize our own. But also, he is widely believed to have been the inspiration for James Bond.
Yep, heard that.
Partly because another member of this same group,
Dirty Trick Squad of Churchill's.
Yes, the title of the book, The Irregulars, comes from a colloquial name for Stevenson's troupe, which was the Baker Street Irregulars, named after the minor Sherlock Holmes characters. But another one of the Irregulars was the man himself, Ian Fleming. And he's mentioned in the book a couple of times.
I feel like I've heard something on this recently. I don't remember from where, though. I can't put my finger on it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I've heard anything recently about it. I read this book a while ago, but I found it quite interesting, and I wanted to bring it to people's attention.
Yeah, it's always interesting seeing biographies and nonfiction in general and how they portray the world. And, of course, being the 1940s, a long time ago, 70-plus years ago, that's something that none of us have experienced, and that record from that time period is starting to get distorted a little bit. So it's always interesting to see what the biographers have to say on that and what the perspective on the time was. And that's why I'm typically a fan of nonfiction more than fiction myself. So this is definitely one that I'll be having an interest in looking at. And for Patreon members, we'll know that we had a rather interesting pre-show about this as well, where you went into more of the subject matter of this book.
Yes, so. There are some very interesting stories about some of the things Roald Dahl, the antics Roald Dahl got up to.
Yeah, so we'll leave that there. But yes. You can find a link to this book, the Goodreads page at update.show, and you probably get paperback, Kindle, audiobook, even wherever, however you prefer to get your books. But that's the Irregulars. So thank you for the pick of the week, Sir Dones.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that pretty much wraps up this episode of RSBNB Update, and please do subscribe to the podcast if you're not already subscribed. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, Google, and more. Visit update.show/subscribe. You'll get given a link to any of your favorite podcast listener out there. It's the best way to ensure you get the show when it arrives late Fridays. And, of course, we also do publish a version on YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. We publish the video version there, as well as the nibbles, clips from the show at youtube.com/RSBNB. So if you use YouTube and you're interested in the podcast, please do give a like and subscribe. It greatly helps the channel out. But with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. So we'll see you then, everybody. Take care.
See ya.
Bye.